The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Diane Edelman for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Reader's Digest. Our first article is from the Health column, Taking Care of You, All of You. Your mental health is just as important as your physical health, by Beth Winehouse. How are you feeling? No, not your stuffy nose or your achy knees. Feeling. There's so much going on in the world right now that many of us are feeling stressed, worried, and anxious. Polls that ask people what they're concerned about list a vast array of subjects, including keeping their families safe, access to health care, identity theft, paying bills, the opioid epidemic, loneliness, social media, job security, the impact of emerging technology, politics and political polarization, climate disasters, current events, and the state of the world. It's no wonder we're so worried. The rapid pace of change in so many arenas right now is a big part of the problem. Change creates anxiety and sometimes depression, says Linda Rosenberg, MSW, who recently left her position at the Columbia University Department of Psychiatry to consult for private and public companies entering the mental health care field. Younger people are looking on Instagram and seeing idealized lives that are driving their anxiety. They're worried about not getting jobs due to AI, she says. Older people experience loneliness. They're living longer, losing friends and family. The pandemic made people more accustomed to living online, which increased feelings of isolation and loneliness for all ages. As New Year's approaches, here's another indicator of how we're feeling. After years of prioritizing our physical health, Americans are now turning inward. Popular New Year's resolutions have always included vows to improve physical health through weight loss, exercise, and healthy eating. But last year, according to the American Psychiatric Association, a record one-third of Americans made a New Year's resolution to prioritize their psychological and emotional health. The things people were resolving to do for the coming year included meditating, spending more time in nature, focusing on spirituality, journaling, taking a social media break, and seeing a therapist or psychiatrist. The saying, "You're not alone," sounds cliche, but it has never been more true. Ken Duckworth, MD, Chief Medical Officer at the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, says some of the shift started with the pandemic, when stress and anxiety almost seemed normal. It became a we thing instead of a they thing, he says. Most of us had somebody in our life who was struggling at this time. More people were willing to talk about it. And for those whose stress and anxiety were interfering with their daily lives and happiness, seeking help for their mental health concerns became more accepted. Currently, anxiety disorders and depression are the biggest mental health challenges facing Americans. And about one in four of us, around 60 million people, report experiencing at least one mental health condition in the past year. The numbers are so high, in fact, that the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has asserted that the country is in the midst of a mental health crisis. There are rising rates of depression and anxiety. We have a substance abuse disorder crisis. I would concur. We are in a mental health crisis, says Marquetta Wills, MD, CEO and Medical Director of the American Psychiatric Association, adding that rates of anxiety and depression are rising steeply in young people. It's true that some of these changes began with the pandemic, but many of America's current mental health challenges actually began before the pandemic even started. During the pandemic, there were increases in depression and anxiety across the population, but many advocates before the pandemic were shouting that mental health was worsening, says Madeline Reinert, Senior Director of Population Health at Mental Health America. The pandemic seemed to speed up an increase we were already seeing and draw more attention to it. In fact, during the pandemic, there was some improvement in certain areas of the country's mental health. While that may seem counterintuitive, experts explain that during a crisis, like a war, natural disaster, or pandemic, people are often focused on getting through the challenge and surviving. One example, suicide rates actually went down slightly during the COVID-19 pandemic. Since then, though, most mental health indicators have returned to pre-pandemic levels. Depression and anxiety in U.S. adults and adolescents has increased about 60% in the last decade, says Dr. Wills. And suicide and drug overdose remain leading causes of death in the United States. While it's normal to feel anxious about things happening in the world today, if stress and anxiety are impeding your day-to-day life and making you feel unwell, please reach out for help, urges Dr. Wills. Your mental health matters. What I think was the silver lining of the pandemic was a kind of profound shift in how we think about mental health, says Dr. Duckworth. COVID opened a conversation in millions of American households about mental health and addiction. Adds Dr. Wills, we've become more open, transparent around issues of mental health in ways that we weren't before the pandemic. I'm encouraged by the fact that many more people are seeking the help that they need once they realize that they have a mental health condition. So many more people are willing to get treatment than perhaps 5 to 10 years ago, before the pandemic. And then there's the huge influence of popular culture. One of the things that's had the biggest impact is when celebrities come out and talk about their own experiences and recovery, says Rosenberg. Many, many celebrities, including Britain's Prince Harry, athlete Simone Biles, and singer-actress Selena Gomez, have done just that. Andrea Paquette, a young woman who calls herself Bipolar Babe, is the president and co-founder of the Stigma-Free Mental Health Society. She's shared her own journey at more than 850 schools, workplaces, and events, connecting with thousands of others who are struggling with mental health disorders. This kind of openness can help people realize that mental illness can affect anyone. The destigmatization not only helps people let go of any shame, but also spurs them to get help. And it encourages government, employers, and communities to offer that help. Recent joint research from the Harris Poll and the American Psychological Association found that nearly 9 in 10 American adults now say that having a mental health disorder is nothing to be ashamed of. But that doesn't mean that mental health is now stigma-free. More than a third of the people polled admitted they would still view someone differently if they learned that person had a mental health condition. So there's still a way to go. Mental health treatment has been different than other health care in that it's done behind closed doors, says Rosenberg. When someone had a physical illness, people brought cakes to comfort them. But people don't do that when someone had a mental illness. People didn't talk about it. Now, at least they're starting to. While anxiety, depression, and substance abuse disorders may lead the numbers and capture the most national attention, less common mental health disorders, such as bipolar disorder and schizophrenia, aren't going away. These mental health conditions may get less attention because their prevalence doesn't change as much in relation to external factors like pandemics and political division. Perhaps because they are both more severe and less common, the stigma around these disorders hasn't abated as much as the stigma around anxiety and depression. Researchers and those who treat mental illnesses say that new ways to identify these serious mental disorders earlier is a priority, as is providing accessible and effective treatment and educating the public. Right now, only about half the people in this country with any mental illness receive treatment for a variety of reasons. Fewer than half of all counties in the United States have a single psychiatrist, says Reinert. A lot of those areas are rural areas. Nationwide, there are 340 people for each psychiatrist. So a lot of places in America, people may have to travel several counties over to get care, which may be out of reach. Money is also a huge factor, with 1 in 4 adults who experience frequent mental distress unable to see a doctor because of cost. Much of what's being done in the field is aimed at addressing these inequities of access and affordability. One way experts are hoping to bring mental health care to more people is by enabling primary care doctors and other health care providers to offer this care in conjunction with mental health experts. Collaborative care allows primary care physicians to consult with mental health professionals so people can get mental health care with their primary doctor, explains Dr. Wills. With collaborative care, you could go see a health care provider for a sore throat, and that person could also help you deal with the anxiety you're feeling. In fact, most mild to moderate mental health conditions are now treated by primary care physicians, she adds. Mental health experts are also working to normalize mental health screenings in healthcare settings. For instance, when you fill out a questionnaire before your annual physical, you might be asked about your moods and emotions along with your physical symptoms. If you're being asked about your mental health all the time, then it's not as jarring to bring up a concern, says Reiner. The other big change coming to mental health care has to do with emerging technology and artificial intelligence, AI. During the pandemic, many people became accustomed to receiving mental health care by telehealth, and that trend has persisted, allowing people to receive mental health care from home. A variety of web-based companies, such as Headspace, Talkspace, BetterHelp, and Spring Health, help match people with online therapists, making care more accessible, especially in rural communities and medical deserts. In addition, some of these companies are offering AI companions to talk to people and are using AI tools to collect large amounts of data with the goal of improving diagnosis and care. A recent study at Dartmouth University using a therapy chatbot called Therabot found that the program resulted in significant improvements in participants' symptoms. While the new technology shows a lot of promise, for now, some experts are urging caution. It's an unregulated industry, and protection of data privacy is paramount, says Dr. Duckworth. We're open to learning about whether there's a way this can fulfill some of the needs, but there have to be protections, guidelines. Adds Dr. Wills, I do think technology will be an important force for mental health treatment in the future, from diagnosis to treatment to research to quality improvement. But I don't believe AI will replace that human interaction, that very important human connection. Unfortunately, some of the positive trends in the field are being offset by new challenges and bars to treatment. For-profit hospitals may not prioritize mental health care, since it doesn't bring in as much money as other types of medical treatments. Doing heart surgery, spine surgery, oncology makes a lot of money, says Rosenberg. The treatment of mental disorders is not a moneymaker. And lingering taboos about mental health, plus the high cost and lack of insurance coverage, persist in making treatment out of reach for many people. Most worrisome of all, though, say the experts interviewed for this article, are funding cuts being made to the National Institute of Mental Health and the Medicaid program. Medicaid currently funds about 25% of all mental health care in the United States. These cuts will affect plus or minus 15 million people. Rural mental health care is already a crisis, says Dr. Duckworth. The Medicaid cuts and closure of the rural infrastructure will be a slow-moving health crisis over time. If you're feeling overwhelmed by stress and worry, or you're experiencing other troubling psychological symptoms, many resources are available to consult for help, no matter where you live or what your personal circumstances are. Ask your family, friends, and neighbors for advice. Often the best information comes from people you know, says Rosenberg. They might offer a fresh perspective or direct you to resources you didn't know about. Consult with your primary care physician. Most anxiety disorders and mild to moderate depression can be treated without you having to see a mental health specialist like a psychiatrist. If you do need a referral, your primary care doctor can help you find the right therapist for a treatment. If you work for a large company, you may have access to a mental health program as part of your benefits. Check with human resources to find out more. Check your health insurance benefits and call to get recommendations for care. Therapy and other treatments may be well covered by your insurance. Therapists and clinics may offer a sliding scale, so treatments aren't out of reach. So ask and find out. Look into mental health outreach support programs in your area. Many are free of charge to residents. If you're in crisis, call 988, the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Check online for a wealth of information. Organizations like NAMI, N-A-M-I, have chapters across the country. Visit NAMI.org and input your town to find a local chapter. Mental Health America offers free online screening tests at screening.mhanational.org to help you determine if what you're feeling could indicate a mental health disorder. No matter what you're feeling, there is help out there. You just have to reach out a hand and ask. That was Taking Care of You, All of You, by Beth Winehouse. Our second article is taken from the cover story in the December-January 25 to 26 issue. It's called Holiday Magic. The spirit of the season comes through in many ways, some carefully planned, others totally unexpected. The Flight Before Christmas. Lucky Kids Get to Visit Santa's Workshop by Sarah Chassay. 'Twas 2 weeks before Christmas at Denver International Airport, and a huge Boeing 777 plane had taxied down one of the runways. From the outside, the jumbo jet looked like any other about to take off. But inside, silver tinsel and strings of colored lights hung from the overhead luggage compartments. Glittery paper snowflakes and curls of red ribbon dangled over the seats. Puffs of cottony snow adorned each headrest, and giant sparkling candy canes graced the back of the cabin. The flight crew was similarly decked out in holiday gear. Santa hats, pointy elf ears, reindeer sweaters. One jokester had donned a Grinch costume. And the plane's passengers, about 100 local children ages 3 to 10 and their family members, were wearing matching T-shirts adorned with the words, Fantasy Flight. The kids also wore big smiles as they munched on snacks and chattered excitedly. For some, this was the first airplane trip they'd ever taken. But for all, their destination promised to be unforgettable. They were headed to the North Pole to visit Santa's workshop. This was one of 13 flights in December 2024 organized by United Airlines as part of its 30-plus-year Fantasy Flights program, which gives children with serious medical conditions or other challenges a unique holiday experience. The participating airport locations, including Los Angeles, Houston, Cleveland, Fort Lauderdale, Newark, London, and more, partner with local hospitals and nonprofits that serve children facing cancer, disability, or homelessness. The kids really deserve this day away from the daily challenges that they have, and it brings some magic into their lives, says Jonah McGrath, Vice President of Airport Operations for United's Denver Hub and a longtime Fantasy Flight volunteer. In Denver, the children and their chaperones are greeted by Santa's helpers as soon as they arrive at the airport, says McGrath, who donned pointy elf ears, glittery face paint, and a whole lot of jingle bells at last year's event. Then the kids go through security, just as all air travelers do, and receive official boarding passes with the North Pole printed on them. it's easy to tell which departure gates is theirs. It's the one with the Christmas trees and giant inflatable teddy bears. As a crowd of youngsters surrounds a uniformed captain, kneeling to pin small gold pilot's wings onto their shirts, other travelers passing through the concourse can't help but stop to take photos. After a sing-along and some dancing, it's time to board the wide-body craft and take to the skies. "Who's ready to go to the North Pole?" the captain asks over the PA system once all the passengers are in their seats. The answer is a chorus of cheers. The plane then takes off and circles the city for about 30 minutes. In the air, flight attendants sing holiday tunes and hand out snacks. "It's basically a party in the sky," says McGrath. Then comes another announcement. "Kids, this is your captain speaking. We've been given clearance from Santa Claus to visit the North Pole. If everyone could please lower their window shades. Once we arrive, I'll let you know when you can open them. Santa is very excited to meet you all." The captain lands the plane back at the airport and drives into a giant hangar. The wide-eyed passengers descend the jet stairs into a winter wonderland. Pulling off this day-long celebration takes hundreds of United employees and other volunteers who decorate, staff the event, perhaps in costume as Frosty the Snowman or Princess Elsa from Frozen, and clean up afterward. Though there's a lot of work involved, it's one of the employees' favorite days of the year. There's usually a wait list to help out. "Once you see it, you can't not be involved," McGrath says. For the next few hours, the kids are treated to special holiday activities. In Honolulu last year, the kids attended hula performances on Christmas Island. In Chicago, they met real live reindeer. Other fun surprises usually include games, an ice cream truck, a magician, face painting, and of course the most exciting moment, meeting Santa Claus. Each child gets a photo with the big man himself and then receives a bag of gifts from their own personal wish list. Maybe roller skates, a cozy hat and gloves, or even a bike, carefully shopped for and wrapped by yet more volunteers. Scott Rogers spent 25 years working for United as a zone controller and supervisor of airport operations in Denver. He's been playing Santa for the city's Fantastic Flights, Fantasy Flights, since 1993. Rogers continues to volunteer well into his retirement because he knows how much the fantasy flight experience means to kids. One of his favorite moments is when the children emerge from the plane and first catch sight of him in his jolly red suit. "They go racing to Santa, and you can't even walk because they're all clinging to your legs," he says. His wife, Patricia Rogers, plays Mrs. Claus alongside him. Both say they love giving the kids their gifts. "Sometimes the bag is so big they can't hardly carry it," Scott says, chuckling. But the interactions they have with the kids warm their hearts even more. Scott remembers taking a photo with one little girl a few years ago. She was about 8 years old and fighting cancer. After meeting him, she made him a candy cane at an arts and crafts station and came back to give it to him, saying, "Santa, this is for you." As the event wound down, Scott was in a dressing room changing out of his red suit when a soft knock came on the door. "There's a little girl out here who wants to talk to you," a woman told him. "So I'm throwing everything back on, and it was that same girl," he recalls. "She came in and said, 'I know I'm not going to be here next year,' and she sat on my lap, and we talked for 40 minutes about what was going on and how happy this day had made her," he says. "That was a tough one for me." Embracing both the hard and happy moments, he and Patricia plan to keep volunteering as long as they can. "It's the best part of Christmas," Patricia says. Scott adds, "The joy you get with these kids, it is just a hoot." Kayla Garcia, CEO of Girls Inc. of Metro Denver, can attest that the young attendees have just as much fun as the volunteers. The nonprofit mentors girls throughout the city and was a local partner for last year's Fantasy Flight. Garcia chaperoned a group of girls in first, second, and third grades. Every part of the day was thought out to ensure that kids felt the magic of the season, and the look in their eyes is something that I will remember forever, Garcia says. We all left believing in the love of others. And now one last very short piece, Helping Vets Walk Tall. In his workshop in Eustis, Florida, Oscar Morris turned an oak limb into a walking cane, then posted about it on Facebook. He hoped to give it to a fellow veteran. Morris got some 500 requests from disabled vets. Inspired, he was determined to fulfill them all. It took him 2 years and nearly depleted his wood supply. Then, a few days after Christmas, Morris got a call from a local Lowe's store. They had unsold Christmas trees. Could he make canes out of them? Sure he could. Every new year, Morris finds fresh trees tossed over his fence. He has made more than 1,000 canes and has no plans to stop, telling Women's World magazine, "I believe this is what God wanted me to do, and I ran with it." And I think we have time for just one more. Hot Diggity Dog. The holidays can get you down, and that's how Lexi Gregory of Alberta, Alabama, felt last December. She was at a park one morning, trying to ease her Christmas blues, when a dog walked over and started licking her face. "It was just the sweetest thing," she told WKRG News 5. Gregory never saw the dog's owner, but assumed he had one. It was only later that day, after posting online about the dog, that she learned he had recently arrived at a local shelter and still needed a home. So Gregory adopted him. "I don't know how to explain it," she says, "but I was just kind of like, that's my dog. He's definitely the Christmas present I didn't know I needed." So now we have run out of time for today's episode. I'm Diane Edelman, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Reader's Digest is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.